The following program is a presentation of the Jewelry Exchange and Auction.
The De Beers people are almost saying what they really mean, because the old De Beers slogan was, "Diamonds are forever." Then they changed it to this year, "Take her breath away." The new slogan is, "Diamonds render her speechless." Well, why don't they just go ahead and say it? Diamonds. That'll shut her up.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? I'm David Bluestein.
And I'm Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio.
We're here each Saturday morning at 7 o'clock to provide an insider's view on the world of jewelry, coins, antiques, collectibles, and much more. As owners and operators of the Jewelry Exchange and Auction, we're on the front line with a finger on the pulse of these markets every day. And as of right now, you have a friend in the business. You know, that clip at the top of our show is comedian Ron White's tribute to the magical effect of diamonds. Today on our Insider Report, you'll get the inside story on Diamonds Aren't Forever. Also, we'll be talking to our friend Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates, San Antonio's top gemologist, and we'll be taking your calls and emails on the subject of diamonds. But first, what a week we had. Last Saturday evening, we had a packed gallery up in Stone Oak, over 14,000 online previews for almost 50 lots of swords, daggers, bayonets, and pistols from pre-Civil War through the Spanish-American War through World War II, including lots of pieces from Nazi Germany. In fact, it was one of the largest collections we've ever handled. We saw lots of new faces. There were lots of dealers and private collectors there. And we shipped merchandise to winning internet bidders all over the world during the week. And of course, there was our usual array of jewelry and coins, too, to fit any budget. Tonight at 7 o'clock for this week's auction, we have more bayonets and knives, several pistols and rifles. Adams, can you tell me anything about the pistols and rifles?
The pistols this week are some older Smith & Wesson revolvers. I've got an early Japanese bolt-action rifle, an early U.S. Bolt-action rifle. The complete pictures and descriptions are all online at jewelryexchangeandauction.com.
Yeah, and we have lots of coins from the Carson City Mint, lots of silver dollars, German porcelain note gelt from the hyperinflation period after World War I. We have key date Lincoln cents. There's an 09S VDB and an 09S and a 31S, and we have a 55 double die. All of that means nothing to anybody who isn't a Lincoln cent aficionado. And, of course, we have more jewelry than we know what to do with, including a Tag Heuer Aqua Racer wristwatch, lots of James Avery jewelry, and diamonds, 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 which, by the way, are the theme of this week's program, Diamonds Aren't Forever. But first, it's time for this week's In the Money trivia quiz, the quiz where you win the answer. First, let's review last week's quiz. Last week's question was this, very simple. Theoretically, pure silver is 100% pure. But in the refining business, silver is never designated as 100% pure. Last week's question, what three numbers do silver refiners use to designate pure silver? The answer, 999, or 0.999, in other words, 99.9% pure. I guess there could be a little fly speck or something in there.
A hair.
A hair. Nobody wants to stick their neck out and say it's pure. It's 99.9% pure. And we had several people with the correct answer, because as things go, that wasn't the hardest question on earth. But the first three, because we had prizes for three people, the first three winners, Kenny Meissner, Tao Tran, and Lori Aquina. If we've just read your name, come on to the Jewelry Exchange and Auction Gallery at 19903 Stone Oak Parkway within the next 30 days to claim your prize. Your prize this week is a 1 ounce .999 silver ingot. That's pure silver. I'll stick my neck out and tell you, those are pure silver ingots.
It's worth about $30 right now.
Yeah. Our gallery, it's open Monday through Saturday from 10 to 6, Saturday evenings during our live auction. If you can't find it, click the Contact Us tab at jewelryexchangeandauction.com. come on up. We hope to see you so you can claim your prize. And now for this week's quiz, Adam, I think you have something.
Yes, I do. Beryl, that's spelled B-E-R-Y-L. It's a type of gemstone. Comes in many colors and is mined in North America, South America, and Africa. Green beryl is commonly known as emerald. And the question is, what is the common name for the light blue beryl variety? To be a winner this week, all you have to do is be one of the first three people to email the correct answer to quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. You can also submit your answer directly from our homepage at www.inthemoneyradio.com, and then listen next week to see if we read your name on the air. And if we do, come claim your prize at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction. It's 19903 Stone Oak Parkway. And you have to claim it within the next 30 days. Enter as often as you like, but please only one winner per household per month. And remember, that email address is quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. That's quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. Good luck. And now let's take a quick commercial break.
Hi, I'm David Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction and co-host of KLUP's In the Money. When you want a new car, you don't drive your old car to the junkyard. When it's time to move, you don't sell your old house for firewood. So why would you treat your old jewelry that way? Your unwanted valuables aren't scrap. At the Jewelry Exchange and Auction, up to 25,000 qualified bidders from all over the world compete for your unwanted valuables at our live auctions. We also need your coins and currency, firearms, and almost any unwanted valuable. Sell it on the spot or auction it for even more money. What's in your closet? Get more at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio. Texas license number 16604, member of the Better Business Bureau. Call 210-592-8786 or visit jewelryexchangeandauction.com. Jewelryexchangeandauction.com. And join us every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. for In the Money right here on KLUP.
You're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the KLUP radio program that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it?
And today we're talking about diamonds. I'm just going to give a few quick facts about diamonds. Diamonds are made of carbon. The atoms are put together in a crystallized pattern. They're formed approximately 100 miles below the Earth's crust. And just about every diamond is at least 1 billion years old. Now, I can go on and on about that all day, but you can find all that information online. There's actually a great show. America's Diamond does a show every night at midnight on Channel 4.
Yeah, that's an excellent program.
And it has good technical information and an explanation of diamond grading. However, they're a retail jewelry store. I'm not endorsing that you go buy some America's Diamonds. But you watch the show, there's a lot of good information on there. In fact, I've had people tell me, but America says that I shouldn't buy a diamond from you because it's not the same quality that they sell. And I like to tell this story. We've handled America's Diamonds. We handle America's diamonds that came from America's, and we still sell them at approximately a third of the retail price. It's the same diamond with the same qualifications, the same grade, only a small fraction of the price.
Yeah, we have a totally different business model than a retail jeweler. Retail jewelers have inventory, and they're basically waiting for the right buyer to come along. And what we have is about 10 days to flip that piece of merchandise. We're in the sell it now business, the auction business. So it's going to be just a different time frame.
And I want to clear up and talk about some of the things that you can't find on TV or on the internet. First, I hear a lot of people say things about diamonds when they come in, just being on the front lines. That just isn't true. All the time I hear people come in and tell me that their diamond is flawless. Mm. And, you know, unless your diamond has, your diamond isn't flawless unless it has a GIA or EGL certificate or that says that it's flawless. The clarity grade F or IF for internally flawless. I had a lady just in the other day who had a VVS1 stone and told me that it was flawless. And a VVS by definition has very minor, but it's not flawless.
Well, I see it in the coin side of the business too. People calling me and telling me, oh, they're holding the coin. It's perfect. Where they come in, and I can see by the way they're holding it, it can't be perfect. They just put their fingerprints all over it. There are grades that mean something. There are technical aspects of this merchandise that the man on the street just can't possibly know without studying.
But for very high grades, I trust GIA, the Gemological Institute of America, EGL, European Gemological Laboratory. They're top-tier diamond grading services. They accurately and consistently grade diamonds, every aspect of the diamond. They are not appraisals. They are basically just certificates that will tell you about the quality of that stone and the physical aspects of that stone. I even had a diamond dealer come tell me recently. I recently bought a very high grade stone and I wanted to submit it to GIA to see what they had to say about it. He told me, no, you should submit it to EGL because EGL will give it a higher clarity grade. I'm thinking, I never heard anybody tell me that before. That was kind of strange, but he's basically telling me to send it to a lower tier grading service because they'll give it a higher grade and I can represent it as something higher than what GIA would say. But I told him, no, I'm going to send it to GIA. I want the GIA certificate. I'd much rather be accurate than just have a piece of paper that says that it's a higher grade than it actually is. There are certification companies that do that.
And so much of our business is to people in the trade who would know in a second who's credible and who isn't credible. And also we have to look people in the eye and tell them things, and we have to live with ourselves. So we prefer to just look people in the eye and tell them the truth. You might not like what we tell you, but it's true and it's accurate to the best of our ability.
But just because you have a piece of paper that says it's a particular grade doesn't necessarily mean it's true. I buy diamonds all the time, and I throw the paper away afterwards because I'd be embarrassed to show it to anybody. And you know, also I should point out that the appraisal, if you have a written appraisal that has a dollar amount for your diamond or for your whole ring, it does not reflect the value of your diamond. An appraisal typically is a retail replacement price. It would cost you if you went to a retail jewelry store and bought the same thing brand new, but yours isn't new, and when you resell it, you're not at a retail jewelry store.
Yeah, today after our break, when we talked to Rudy Pena, Rudy is one of the top-rated appraisers in the city, if not the whole south of Texas. And Rudy's going to tell you what appraisal means and the different layers of appraisal. This is a real eye-opener.
But typically when you sell your jewelry, your diamond ring, that what you're probably going to get, if somebody's treating you fairly, is probably about 10%, 10 to 20% of what your appraisal says. At auction, we can typically realize about 20 to 35% of what the appraisal says. Designer jewelry, as much as 50% of the appraisal. We did a whole show on this a few weeks back. You can listen to our jewelry show at inthemoneyradio.com. We do podcasts, and you can stream the old shows. And so I suggest you go listen to that. We talked a lot about that.
Yeah, the jewelry show entitled Jewelry is an Investment, a Very Bad Investment.
That's the one.
That's talk about eye-openers.
And most people know that diamonds are very hard. It is the hardest material on the planet. Only another diamond can scratch a diamond.
And the fact is you can't even break a diamond with a hammer.
Well, that's what I was just about to say, the contrary. That is actually a description of the toughness. The toughness is the resistance to chipping and breaking. If you squeeze a diamond with a pair of pliers or you smash it with a hammer, it will break. I've done it.
You can break a diamond with a hammer.
And also, diamond material itself is not rare. Diamonds are commodities that are traded among dealers at set prices. We even take diamonds and use the broken pieces to dress grinding wheels. I have diamonds that I'll sell you for under $10. You know, they're small and low grade, but it's still a diamond. I've dropped some diamonds on the ground and not even bothered to pick them up. On the other side of that, if you wanted, for example, a very high-grade 5-carat diamond, well, I'd have one by Monday for you, and it would probably cost you something around $100,000, but I mean, they're not so rare that I couldn't just have one delivered. They're around. Why are diamonds so expensive then if they're not so rare? Well, large high-grade diamonds are relatively more rare than small low-grade diamonds. that a 5-carat diamond is you can find one, but they're not so common that you're going to be able to pick one up for a very small price. Diamonds are well marketed. There's De Beers from the opening of our show. I mean, they have a lot of diamonds. They want to push them, and it's a well marketed commodity.
Yeah, on the In the Money Facts of Life that we have on the homepage of our InTheMoneyRadio.com site, we put Facts of Life number 9 and 10 together for a reason. Number 9, most valuables aren't rare; they're just well marketed. And that's certainly the case with De Beers and the diamond marketing cartels. And then number 10 is the definition of rare is you don't have it. Just because you have a diamond doesn't mean it's rare. And just because somebody might have charged you a lot for it doesn't mean it's valuable.
That's right. When we buy and sell our diamonds, we are always using Rappaport magazine. Rappaport magazine is a monthly price list. It's a whole magazine. And it basically reflects prices of actual diamond deals. Rappaport doesn't determine what the market does. The market determines what Rappaport says for the next month, just like the gray sheet for coins. The dealers are actually determining where the market is. We buy and sell diamonds. At a discount to Rappaport, usually at something like 50% of Rappaport, 50% back of Rappaport. You might hear some dealers say 30 back, 40 back, 50 back. What they're talking about is how many percentage points less than the full Rappaport price are they buying or selling.
In the Rappaport magazine, it reports a grid of pricing for quality and for clarity and color. And then it says that reflects the high New York cash asking price. And I always say, well, what's the non-high San Antonio real world bidding price? Because that's what you need to know.
That's the question.
Not what's the top dollar you could get in New York if you were there.
I mean, I recently sold some very high grade 1-carat diamonds with GIA reports for about 40% back of Rappaport. And that I actually sold to a dealer. But I'm going to get more into that in just a minute. That retailers will very often sell their diamonds at 200% to 300% of Rappaport. So you see what a big difference that is. But ultimately, Rappaport, nobody seems to really be buying and selling at Rappaport. It's a benchmark. Just like the spot metal prices, really. That everybody wants to buy and sell at the spot metal prices, the prices that you see on the tickers and on the news. But when you sell, you are going to sell less than spot. When you buy, you are going to buy more than spot. So with Rappaport, it's kind of the same kind of thing. The value of these diamonds depends on what we call the 4 C's. And again, if you watch the America's show, it'll explain all about the 4 C's. But they're clarity, color, carat weight, and cut. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that the cut matters an awful lot. That everybody seems to be familiar with the clarity, the color, and the carat weight. How clear is your diamond? What kind of color does it have? How big is it? How much does it weigh? That seems to be really important. But the cut affects the price significantly. Round diamonds are always in style. They seem to never go out of style. Princess cut, that's the square cut, seems to be on its way out, actually. I hear a lot of people in the industry telling me that, and it's not so much my experience, but I've heard enough respectable people say it that I'm starting to believe it myself. And cushion is on its way, and I'm starting to get more requests for a cushion cut.
What's a cushion look like, Adam?
Well, a cushion looks like a cushion. It's kind of a square with rounded sides and rounded corners, kind of like a square pillow.
Is it kind of like a modified princess cut?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a modified princess cut.
You'd call it a cushion cut.
I'd call it a cushion cut, actually, right. The from the 80s, if you were looking at jewelry in the 80s, you would definitely you definitely know what I'm talking about with marquee diamonds.
What are you looking at me for?
marquee diamonds I can hardly give away right now.
Yeah, in the 80s, they were new and exciting, and people wanted that cut. And now, my apologies to the older females in our audience, but now they're referred to as old lady diamonds.
And so you show me even a larger and even a high-grade marquee diamond, I don't even particularly want it. I don't even know what I would do with it except just blow it off. So I have to buy it cheap and sell it cheap, regardless of what the quality of the stone is. Just nobody wants that cut. Also, emerald is pretty out of style right now. You look at an emerald diamond, it doesn't have the kite and triangular-shaped facets that the brilliant diamonds have.
An emerald-cut diamond being a rectangular diamond,
yeah,
really,
with a
flat table on top.
And with cut-off corners. And you just look at it, and it doesn't sparkle the way a round brilliant or princess or any other brilliant cut diamond does. And because a lot of this has to do with eye appeal. If it doesn't sparkle and look beautiful, the lady doesn't particularly want it on her hand. And so those are generally bought and sold at a discount, too. The very low-grade diamonds that we'll sell even at auction with no reserve. I have some recent auction results of real diamonds that we actually sold recently. You can check it out on our homepage at jewelryexchangeandauction.com. You click on the auction archive section, and you can see these. We recently sold a 1.41 carat round brilliant diamond for $1,200. I recently sold a 0.28 carat round brilliant diamond for $70. And these were real diamonds, guarantee it. But that was the high bid at auction. That's what we sold them for. We will sell them. We will sell to the public and dealers at the same price. I figure a dollar from a dealer is the same as a dollar from the public. And how are we able to sell them so cheaply is, well, we're buying from the public. That I'm not buying from a wholesaler. I'm not buying them retail. I'm buying from the public and paying as much as I can for them, and then selling them at real dealer prices. That's really the only way for the public to buy them at that level, at the same price a dealer would expect to pay. I'll talk briefly about colored stones, too. They tend not to be particularly valuable, most of the ones we see. When we sell them at auction, they sell for next to nothing. Gem jars full of them, $10 to $40. And just like diamonds, the right types and large high grades can be very expensive, very valuable. The big three, like emerald, ruby, sapphires, alexandrite, and tanzanite, very popular and can be very valuable, although most of the ones we sell will sell for very little. David, you want to talk about melee diamonds, small diamonds?
Yeah, Adam's been talking about the large diamonds, the center stones in nicer pieces, and, dare I say it, the sexy diamonds. But then there's the other diamonds, too, the accent stones, the little guys, that are known in the trade as melee diamonds. Melee comes from the French for medley, and literally means a confused battle or a riot. It's just kind of a mess of diamonds. Melee diamonds are diamonds that are generally a fifth of a carat or smaller. They can be any cut, any quality, and any color. And frankly, they're traded in packets between knowledgeable parties. We break ours into 0 to 5 points. There's 100 points to a carat, so 0 to 5 is anywhere from just the teeniest little diamonds to a 20th of a carat. So 0 to 5 points, 5 to 10, 10 to 20. And even lower quality, larger stones can be considered melee. Where does the melee come from? Well, originally from mines and brokers, but where do we get it? Well, from breakout diamonds, from scrap. We buy an awful lot of scrap that doesn't make it into the auction because, believe me, you don't want that stuff. And so we send it to the refiner, and rather than purifying the gold in other ways, they're going to do it in a chemical kind of way where the stones drop out. They send them back to us, and we sort them.
And yes, a lot of these gold buyers, they are getting the diamonds back and selling them, even if they tell you that, well, I don't buy diamonds. I don't know anything about diamonds. I just throw them away.
Yeah, you can just go take them out if you want and then bring me back the gold. You might hear that, but believe me, those diamonds are being sold in packets.
But we're aggressive buyers of those.
You know, the quality of the melee that we run into can be anything, but in general, it's probably going to be rather bad quality because most jewelry comes from commercial jewelry stores, and the small stones, people generally don't put a lot of attention into the quality of those stones. And so we just put it together in packets, as do most sellers, and we'll sell it to jewelers. Although most jewelers are looking only for sorted stones, but at auction, we'll just put it into packets of various sizes and sell it off 2 or 3 carats at a time. And then there's the road runners, the guys that just come up and down the highway. A lot of them are from L.A., and they're going to just come and say, how many carats do you have? We put them on the scale. Our promise to them is we don't pick out all the good ones, and our request from them is that they don't make us keep the bad ones, and then they're just traded like popcorn. For example, the Melly diamonds from our Roadrunners, anywhere from $60 to $115 a carat is what we get. We work on margins no more than 15%, no more than 30%, and as low as 15%, lower and lower margins for higher quality and higher quantity. So, you know, the diamonds, unless there's something pretty rare about them, they're really just traded like popcorn.
It's a commodity.
I don't know how else to say it. Hey, that music means we're up against a hard break. KLUP is about to take you away, but we're not going anywhere, and we'll be right back with Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates. I can't wait to hear what Rudy has to say about what we've been talking about. You're listening to In the Money with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction. We're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Today, our very special guest, Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates. Rudy is San Antonio's premier gemologist, a gemologist. In fact, when we need third-party certification and appraisal, Rudy is our guy. Welcome, Rudy. Thanks for joining us on In the Money.
Thank you.
Hey, the other day, Rudy, I know you heard me telling somebody that your credentials, your resume, is as long as your arm. And you said, yeah, if you have a short arm. But, I mean, I'm looking at your resume right now. You have a long list of coursework and certification from the Gemological Institute of America, GIA, the number one diamond and colored stone certification and grading service in the world. Lots of credentials and coursework from International Society of Appraisers. You're a member of the National Gemological Institute of America. You're a past president of the San Antonio chapter of the GIA, and you're a past president of the International Society of Appraisers, the San Antonio chapter. And also, I happen to know that you're a GIA mentor. What does that mean?
The mentor program is a program that was provided and set up by the Gemological Institute of America. And there's a lot of students that are taking what is called correspondence courses from the Gemological Institute. And the people out in the field do not have access, or perhaps they can't afford the equipment to do the courses that they're taking. And what I do is provide them with a source of being able to use the equipment required for them to do the testing and the analyzing of the stones that they're studying. And then also to provide them with whatever answers and questions that they might have on the courses they're taking. And so it's worked out very good.
Well, I've known you for a few years, Rudy, and I know you're a humble guy, but I also know that GIA isn't going to put you in this position unless they have a lot of respect for you, too. So I know you must be doing something right. Tell me, how did you get involved with diamonds and gemstones?
Well, it's interesting because I was actually in the Air Force and was a mechanic on C-130 aircrafts, and when I got out of the Air Force, I went to work for a discount store or a catalog store here in San Antonio. It's already closed, but many years ago it was opened, and it was called O.G. Wilson's. O.G. Wilson's was a store that had a variety of merchandise, appliances, stereos, sporting goods, toys, jewelry, and so forth. And eventually I got to be the manager of the store, and their biggest producer of profit was obviously the jewelry department. I knew absolutely nothing about jewelry, so having to be the manager and be productive and produce the sales in that area, I figured I better learn and study about them.
Better learn something.
And that's how I started too.
And basically, I went from wrenches to tweezers.
Yeah. And so, what's your typical day like as a gemologist?
Typical day is kind of like nothing's happening, and all of a sudden everything falls off the doors. People buy jewelry, and unfortunately, the majority of the buyers don't really understand what they're buying. When they get into a situation that they want to resell their piece for whatever purpose, and we're seeing this more in today's economy because people are liquidating their jewelry to get money that they need to continue to fill up their gas tanks and put food on the table and continue to have a roof over their head. And so things have been difficult, and so they bring the items to me. I review them, give them as much of an authenticity as I can, and then give them some ideas as to how they can liquidate them. And so from there on, the day kind of just spins right off and keeps going.
Now, I know you travel a lot too, right?
I do travel, and I travel up as far west as New Mexico and to El Paso and to Las Cruces and to Albuquerque.
Because they don't have gemologists out that way, right?
They probably don't. No, they do have them. But we fortunately started a relationship with some jewelers out there many years ago, and we've maintained a very good rapport of working with each other, and so they're happy with my services, and I'm happy with the opportunity to continue to work with them. And as a matter of fact, we've been traveling out in those areas for almost 25 years.
Right. Now, you were just talking about how you meet with clients. Do you actually represent them in any way, or you just tell them what they have?
Represent them in...
Well, if they said, okay, well, now you told me what I have, do you help them figure out what to do
with
yes.
it? Oh, yes. Yeah, if they have items that they want to liquidate, and I'm in a position to be able to assist them to liquidate it, yes, I do. I offer the services to them, explain the process, and establish the groundwork as to what we're going to do and what it's going to cost and how much they can expect on getting back. And so, yes, we do handle those kind of opportunities.
What do you tell them they can expect to get back?
There's a lot of different things. You know, I had a situation yesterday. A lady came in, had a watch, and some appraiser told her that it was 125 years old, and they assigned an antique value to it.
And it belonged to Abraham Lincoln, right?
That's Abraham Lincoln.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, when they brought it to me, I told her, the lady, I said, first of all, I said, in order for me to qualify antiquity, I have to be able to confirm and proof that the item is 100 years old. And there's nothing here that shows that this watch is 100 years old. As a matter of fact, the diamonds that are on it are modern brilliant cuts.
That are probably no more than 70 years old.
The modern brilliant cuts were started somewhere in the late 40s to 50s,
right.
And so consequently that took out the 125 years
sure.
right away.
This is forensic jewelry, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so unfortunately she was disappointed because they had told her that they gave her an appraisal on it for almost $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her I don't think that you're going to be able to get any more than $800 to maybe $1,500 for it if you can sell it. The problem with those kind of watches is that there's only certain demographics that buy those, and it's the older generation, and unfortunately they can't see the dials on there anymore, so they don't want them.
Well, yeah, one of our facts of life that we always refer to, and you know, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's really true. If young people don't want it, then nobody wants it, meaning that older people, as they liquidate, older people generally aren't buying merchandise, and so who buys? The younger people buy, and if what you have is something the young people don't want to buy, then you cannot expect to get very much money for that.
And the other thing is that a lot of young people don't even use watches. They
exactly.
use their mobiles
that's
and
right.
decide that that's what time it is. And
yeah.
don't.
So
don't
tell me, Rudy, are you buying and selling, or are you the only guy in town that doesn't buy old gold?
The only time that I buy gold is when I do liquidations of estates. And when we do that, the customer wants to go ahead and move the settlement of the estate as quickly as possible.
They want it liquidated.
They want to liquidate it. And so when that opportunity comes up, we go ahead and work in that area and help them out in trying to get the estate settled as quickly as possible.
So we know that you're dealing in diamonds and colored stones and jewelry, and you've just said watches. And I happen to know that that you have your hands in a few other areas of valuables and collectibles. Would you say that you specialize in anything in particular?
as far as merchandise is concerned?
Well, yeah. If there was one area where you were just the top of your game, just the sharpest guy around.
Most of all, I enjoy working with diamonds and colored stones as far as identification and evaluating and determining what the needs of the customers are. So that's pretty much my niche. I really enjoy working with those kind of stones. And colored stones are very difficult because people don't understand them. And you have to go through a step-by-step analytical process in order to confirm that what you're saying is what it is. You can't say that it's a sapphire and if you can't substantiate it. So it is very analytical, and it's always good to do those things. And sometimes you mentioned the studies with the mentor program. I have some selfish motives in this, and the thing is that by working with these people, I am getting the up-to-the-current information from GIA that assists me to provide the information to the customers on any questions that they might have.
So the state of the art is changing.
Exactly. The state of the art is changing all the time. There's items that people don't understand. There's what they call fusion treatments for rubies, and basically what those are is colored sapphires that have been treated to make them look like rubies. And unless you know what to look for, you're basically buying a stone that is not a ruby but appears to be one.
And you tell just by looking, or you have to go through a certain process?
Well, after you do so many of them, you kind of have an idea by looking at it, but there are routine processes that you have to do, especially with fusion stones. And so, yes, in answer to your question, there is a process that you look to go ahead and answer that.
But after a while, you say, uh-oh, this I smell a rat.
Right. Any time a red flag appears, I immediately take the direction of being very analytical with what we're going to do.
Right.
Anytime I hear something that has to do with any kind of legal direction, I even take more steps to make sure that I'm doing what is necessary.
Exactly.
I was just recently at the GIA lab in New York, and they're still color grading diamonds by eye and using master stone sets. And I know I've been to your office before, and you have a color grading machine that I've never seen anybody else use. Tell me about that machine.
The machine that I use is called a colorimeter, and basically what this machine does is you take the diamond, there's a little pedestal inside the machine, you set the diamond onto that pedestal, hit the button test, and what it does, it actually shoots a light through it, creates a spectra. The computer analyzes the spectra, and from that analyzation, it tells you what the color of the stone is. Now, the reason I like that machine is because it's unbiased. It doesn't have to satisfy anybody. It tells you exactly what it is. I usually test myself because I'll color grade the stone first, then put it on the machine, and kind of make sure that my eyes are still in the same area of what it should be.
Right.
Now, nothing is 100%. The machine's not 100%. You know, there's little things that can interfere and give you a different grade than it really is.
Like if it's mounted or something?
The machine cannot do mounted stones, so the stones have to be unmounted. Now, there are some new machines available that can be graded with the stones mounted, but I don't really care for them because you go through a process of wrapping the mounting with aluminum foil so forth and so on in order to get the grade.
Well, what's the issue? What's the issue with grading a mounted stone?
The issue of determining the color grade?
Right.
Well, the thing about it is that sometimes the stone is mounted in a way that you cannot tell the color because it's absorbing a little bit of the color from the metal, especially
yellow gold.
Yellow mountings especially. That's why you see so many low-grade diamonds such as LMO colors that are mounted on yellow because the contrast is not there, so they blend into the yellow and make the yellow diamond look nicer on the yellow setting than it would on the white.
Well, but it works the other way, too. When we have somebody who has selected a yellow-gold setting, we let them know that maybe they don't have to go to such a nice white color on the diamond because even if they go to the expensive white stone, it's going to look a little bit yellow in that setting.
Well, people buy diamonds for one of two reasons, and that is quality or quantity. And sometimes they do it without knowing it, but that is the final decision that they use in order to buy what they do buy.
Right. Now, you've mentioned a little earlier that you kind of got into the jewelry business working through a general merchandiser. But I know that we've talked before, and you told me that you did work for a jewelry chain once, a rather maybe a large national chain. And I just want to know if you have just any comments about some things that these larger chains might do to help with marketing. I know that you had some comments about the trade-in programs that they tend to have, or anything else to talk about. What kind of marketing is taking place at large jewelry chains?
Well, you're correct. I did work for a large chain, and at the time that I worked with them, they were the largest jewelers in the world. And so they were a great training ground for being able to learn about the jewelry industry. And one of the things that we did talk and mention about the trade-ins is people don't understand what trade-ins actually are, how they worked, how they're applied towards a purchase of a future diamond. Most of the stores will offer you 100% trade-in, but they don't tell you, or if they do, they don't emphasize it, that you need to buy double the amount of what you originally spent in order for you
right.
to get the 100%
right.
trade-in amount. Now, this is not to say that every jewelry store does that. There are some jewelry stores that offer you some percentages that are much more workable. But the thing is that as a buyer, you need to understand what you're buying, what the groundwork is for you to play by the rules that they're setting out, and for them to explain them to you in layman's words.
Because I think it'd be fair to say that you can upgrade, but you're in a way you're just getting in deeper and deeper.
When you go and buy a $5,000 diamond and they expect you to get a $10,000 diamond to get $5,000 back, that's
right.
a big jump.
You're not going to raise money that way.
Well, that leads me to my next question. A few weeks ago, we did a show here on In the Money. We had Oscar Bubba Villarreal from the jewelry store here, and the name of the show was Jewelry is an Investment, a Very Bad Investment. Would you care to comment on that statement?
Jewelry, you know, sometimes I walk into jewelry stores and just to do some reviewing, some price
right.
checking and things of that nature. And unfortunately, one of the terms that a lot of salespeople use is that jewelry is a good investment. Well, it's not, and I'll give you an example. The Rolex President right now is selling for approximately $30,000. That's a Rolex 18-karat President selling for approximately $30,000 retail. If you bought that watch and walked outside the store and tried to sell it, you would not sell it for $30,000.
Right.
You'd be lucky to sell it for $15,000,
$18,000. Right.
And you don't really understand that. Now, I'm going to take a step back and tell you that jewelry is a good investment in certain areas. If you go into a situation to where you buy some estate jewelry that is bought back in the 30s and the 40s, that they probably paid $800 for a carat diamond, today they're selling it for $3,000, that is an investment. They made a profit on that in the resale of that item. So it all depends on the groundwork of where you buy it, how you buy it, and then what you're going to do once you buy it, if you're going to keep it, wear it, enjoy it. In most instances, if you buy a piece of jewelry, the major feature that you should consider in buying it is it's a piece of jewelry, I want to wear it, and hopefully you'll never have to sell it. If you do have to sell it, then you have to understand that what you paid for it is not what you're going to get for it.
Yeah, you're going to take some kind of loss, and in fact, you might take a beating. Yep. You know, I want to mention, too, I hear your point, about if you bought it long enough ago, but yeah, I have people bring me $1,000 bills that haven't been made by the U.S. government. I suppose they've been made by other governments, like Iran, maybe counterfeiting our money. But since 1934, and if you had a $1,000 bill in 1934, I think you could have bought a new car with it. And now that $1,000 bill might make a couple car payments if you bought something not
too
expensive.
Well, we sold a $1,000 bill for about $1,400.
$1,600, that's
okay.
right. We gave the consigner $1,480. I've got so many numbers in my head. I just can't stand the noise sometimes. So, you know, I think when you factor in inflation, it's kind of hard. You might make extra dollars, but I think when you consider the buying power of those dollars, it's hard for me to come up with many ways where jewelry is a good investment. I think that jewelry that you buy at our gallery in Stone Oak at the Jewelry Exchange is less expensive than you can buy that almost anywhere, if not anywhere. But I still don't call that an expense an investment, because if you brought it back to us the next day, we're still going to charge you. We're still going to offer you less than what you paid for it.
Oh yeah, real quick, I've had some customers come in and say, Adam, sell me an investment. I want to invest in diamonds. Sell me a diamond. And I told them, look, I can show you diamonds, but I'm not going to tell you it's a good investment. the margins where you buy and sell, just too much to overcome. The prices would have to fluctuate an awful lot.
You know, it's I'm looking at the clock. It's time for us to go to a short commercial break, and then we're going to come back and continue our conversation with Rudy Pena from Pena & Associates, and, of course, me, David Bluestein, and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange. So please don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Hi, this is Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio. Everybody knows that you can get great deals on jewelry, coins, and collectibles at our Saturday night auctions. But did you know that we now have our federal firearms license? That's right. This is Texas, and Texans love guns. We are selling guns just as fast as we can get them, and our bidders want more. We need your unwanted firearms for our live auctions. We'll show them to over 10,000 qualified bidders to get you the highest price, and for a limited time, we'll do it for a reduced commission, only 20% of the sale price. Nobody else in town can do that for you. Just mention this ad to receive the special offer. And it's all happening at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction each Saturday in San Antonio. Texas license number 16604, member Better Business Bureau, call 210-592-8786 or visit jewelryexchangeandauction.com. That's jewelryexchangeandauction.com and join us every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. for In the Money right here on KLUP.
You're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Our special guests today, Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates, and the topic of our show, Diamonds Aren't Forever. Rudy, you mentioned before something about an enhancement to diamonds, a treatment for that makes, I think you said sapphires look like rubies. And there are treatments that are being done on lots of different kinds of stones, including diamonds, right?
Yes, that's correct. Back in the 70s, colored diamonds were very popular. And these were actually color-enhanced diamonds that had been treated and changed into different colors. Light browns, yellows, greens, blues. But all of these were changed by a laser process. Now, these are what are called color-enhanced diamonds. They're not as popular today, even though every now and then some of those colored diamonds show up in liquidations. And today what you have to look out more for is for the conditions of diamonds that that are laser treated, or they are what is called the Yehuda treatment, which is a treatment where a solution is absorbed by the diamond to hide fractures and make it look like a better stone than it is.
Great.
There's nothing wrong with that process. The only problem is that there is not enough disclosure, and the customers that buy them do not understand what an enhanced diamond is. Now, that is what is called a clarity enhancement. The problem arises when a person takes the diamond for a repair at a jewelry store, and consequently the jeweler doesn't know the difference between a regular diamond and a treated diamond. So when he puts fire to that diamond, he will burn that solution, and all of a sudden you got a problem here because the diamond is going to go from an I-1 to a flawless.
Well, what in the world can a retail buyer do to protect himself then?
Just be honest, tell the customers exactly what it is, and you will eliminate a lot of problems.
And the customer, he walks into a store, I mean, how does he have any prayer of knowing what he's doing?
Well, unfortunately, the system is not there to educate the buyer, and that is one of the important things that the previous company that I used to work for was always emphasizing. You know, make sure that your customer is understanding what they're buying, teach them what you know, and make them feel comfortable about the purchase, and you'll get a lot more return business that way. And not only that, but you'll get a lot of referrals also.
You know, I know that a big part of your business is not just identification, but appraisals, putting cash values on the merchandise that you're looking at. But Adam and I know we talk about it all the time, and certainly I don't have to tell you, there are different kinds of appraisals, right?
There's a lot of appraisal differences, and you know, unfortunately, there is no state or federal regulation that regulates appraisers. Now, some years back when we had the savings and loans problems, the government went ahead and regulated some of the real estate properties appraisers because of the fact that they were appraising merchandise and those were used as collateral, and the money was not there. So.
I saw that on The Sopranos.
Really? But so unfortunately, they're not regulated. But a lot of appraisers don't realize that there is a major liability that they take on when they do appraisals, because those documents are used for the purpose of any. It could be a divorce. It could be a an insurance coverage or things of that nature. And if the item is misrepresented or overpriced, then the buyer can come in and pretty much lay a liability on the appraiser.
Are some gemstones, can a gemstone be more valuable than a diamond, or is diamond just top of the line?
Not really. One of the most expensive stones, the colored stones, that is actually more expensive in some cases than diamonds, and obviously you have to take everything into consideration, the size of the stone compared to the size of the diamond. But the Alexandrite, which is one of the more popular stones and is extremely difficult to find, actually it's more abundant in Russia, that is actually a very expensive stone. The Alexandrite is known for the phenomena of having what is called a color change. Under incandescent light, it looks red. Under fluorescent light, it looks green. So it can be very expensive.
Well, and tell us, what's the biggest or the most expensive stones that you've ever handled?
Actually, I did an appraisal on a pear-shaped diamond that was 25 carats.
Wow.
It was an absolutely gorgeous stone.
25
carats. And the stone appraised for over $1 million. And so one of the nicest pieces that I did was a yellow diamond, natural yellow diamond, which was priced at approximately $500,000, about 11 carats. So that was a beautiful piece.
Rudy, if our listeners wanted to contact you, what should they do?
They can call us at 210-349-4367. We're located at 7330 San Pedro at the San Pedro Plaza Building, Suite 175, or you can reach us on the internet at rudypena.com.
And if they want to talk to you for free, just to talk, are you willing to do that?
They're welcome to give us a call and any questions that they have, I'd be more than glad to answer.
Hey, Rudy, did you ever break a diamond with a hammer?
Yes.
You know, I had a guy come in, he says, he's scratching up my case with his diamond. See, it's a real diamond. I said, I could do that with a screwdriver. Stop scratching up my case. Hey, we're out of time this week. Our thanks to Rudy Pena, Pena & Associates, for joining us. We'll be back next week at 7 a.m. with our new program, Death and Taxes. And our special guest will be attorney and financial planner Glenn Yale of the Yale Law Firm. If you have questions about death or taxes or just about any other esoteric or philosophical issue, please call us at the Jewelry Exchange, 210-592-8786, or email questions at inthemoneyradio.com. We'll answer all your questions. We hope to see you all tonight at 7 o'clock for our live auction at the Jewelry Exchange in Stone Oak. And we hope you'll join us again next Saturday at 7 a.m. for In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Thank you for joining us, and everybody have a great week.